This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Today's show was recorded, so we can't take your calls this afternoon. In early December, the Interfaith Hospitality Network of Cincinnati invited Jim Wallace to speak at their annual meeting. Since founding the Sojourners community in Washington, D.C., and Sojourners magazine, Wallace has been one of the most prominent evangelical voices in America. Wallace is the author of 12 books, most recently America's Original Sin, Racism, White Privilege, and The Bridge to a New America. While in town, Jim Wallace joined us, along with the executive director of the Interfaith Hospitality Network of Greater Cincinnati, Stacy Burge. Well, Jim Wallace and Stacy Burge, it is great to have you on Cincinnati Edition. And Jim, welcome to Cincinnati.
Great to be back.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan.
Good to have you there. There's been a great deal of interest in the public role of evangelical Christians in the age of Donald Trump. Let's just start out by saying, what sets off evangelical Christianity from other modifiers of Christianity?
Well, I get this question a lot, as you might imagine. And so I always start with how Jesus defined evangelical. In his first sermon, his first gig, his opening mission statement at Nazareth, I call it his Nazareth Manifesto. He quotes Isaiah. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor." And the word for good news there in the Greek is evangel, from which we get evangelical, evangelism. What that says in that text is any gospel that isn't good news to the poor isn't the gospel of Jesus, period.
So not just good news, but good news to the poor.
To the poor. That's what Jesus' opening gig says. So if you can take him seriously, that's what it's supposed to mean. Now, that's not what you'd think of when you think of white evangelicals in America today. So the first thing is let's talk about white evangelicals as different from evangelicals or people of color. There's a very different perspective on many of these things. I think our faith meant to be good news, but particularly to those in that text in Luke 4 who are poor, who are the captives, the oppressed, left out, and left behind. My conversion text that brought me to Christ was Matthew 25. I call it the it was me test. Jesus says, I was hungry. I was thirsty. It was me. I was naked. I was a stranger, meaning immigrant, refugee. I was sick. I was in prison. And you weren't there for me. Lord, when did we see you hungry, thirsty, naked? We would have at least formed a social action committee, had we known. And he says, as you've done it to the least of these, you've done to me. At the time, I was a student activist years ago, reading Ho Chi Minh, Karl Marx, and Che Guevara. None of them were as radical as is Jesus. So I signed up because of that text. I'll know how you love me, Jesus says, by how you treat the least of these.
But then how do you square with the incredible support of white evangelicals for Donald Trump?
Well, in the term white evangelical or white Christian, what's the operative word? Is it Christian, evangelical, or is it white? There's a transactional analysis they've made. I know these people. We have breakfast and talk, and they've made a deal, as they would say. They get their policy issues and they ignore all the rest. The problem is you're ignoring principal teachings of Jesus here about who is my neighbor, what is the truth, who is the greatest. Jesus addresses all these questions, and they're very different answers than we're hearing now from Washington, D.C. and the White House. So there's been a transactional analysis there that not only doesn't provide a clear teaching of Jesus, but doesn't give him the pastoral care that he so clearly, I would say, desperately needs.
In your latest book, which is entitled America's Original Sin, Racism, White Privilege, and the Bridge to New America, what's going to be the difference between the current America? And I have to say, you wrote this before the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between the current America and what you see as the new America that we're heading towards?
Well, what's at stake right now in this country are two things. One is the soul of the nation. Two is the integrity of faith. What kind of nation are we going to be? Who are we going to be? Who's a part of this? And what does faith have to do with that? We're going to be looked at historically for how we answered that question. So when you have, Lincoln once said, leaders should appeal to our better angels in his first inaugural. Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is appealing to our worst demons, and they're right below the surface. And so this really is what the Bible would call spiritual warfare. It's more than political. It's angels versus demons, our very best and our very worst. We're both full of best and worst, and yet our worst is being appealed to on a daily basis. And so this is really a crisis of faith for our time. So a lot of us are talking about the need to reclaim Jesus. What does it mean to reclaim Jesus and what he taught in a time like this? In Chinese, the word for crisis are the symbols for danger and opportunity. So we have real danger facing us now. We could have a constitutional crisis any day. We've got people targeted every day. You've got a president who said, this election's about me. That's what he said. And he didn't run on his issues or even his claimed successes. He ran against an alleged caravan of migrants coming north. And I have staff with that caravan, walking with them. And they're nothing like what Donald Trump said they are. He's evoking fear. He's dividing us. He's using race, really, as a political tactic to divide us and to inflame his base. And that's just, you know, it's whatever you think about politics, big government, small, those are all fair issues. This is using our fear of the other to divide us. And that becomes a biblical issue, a theological issue. So reclaiming Jesus in a time of crisis is where we have to go. I think this is a chance to go deeper if we're willing to. Not left and I say don't go left, don't go right, go deeper. Because left and right won't resolve this. Politics won't resolve this. We've got to go deeper here and ask what kind of nation we want to be.
Stacy Burge, you're the head of the Interfaith Hospitality Network of Greater Cincinnati. You decided to bring Jim Wallace in. First off, tell us a little bit about the mission of your organization and what you're doing, and then we'll get to why you thought this was the right time to have Jim Wallace talking to your supporters.
Well, at Interfaith Hospitality Network, for about 30 years now, we have been a place to turn to for parents and children who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. So we're a social service agency, and our mission has really been about simple things, making sure people have roof overhead, have their basic needs met, and have the kind of support and resources they need to be able to think about the future and move forward as families. So our mission is pretty simple and pretty straightforward. We want all families in Cincinnati.
How do you deliver on that mission,
sure,
though?
We deliver on that mission, and that's what makes us a little bit different than some of the other programs in town, specifically by partnering with the faith community to help us provide shelter and outreach. It is an interfaith effort. We have Protestants, Catholics, Jewish synagogues, Muslim mosques, Unitarians, and even the Tri-State Freethinkers, who are an atheist group, who participate as a congregation in this effort. But this connects to why we brought Jim Wallace to town, the way that we do what we do. Part of what we ask people to do in these faith communities by helping us be there for parents and children in need is to sort of cross the divide. The families that we work with often end up being othered. Jim mentioned, in the current climate, there's a lot of divisive language being used to sort of play upon fears and to put people into other categories. And that's what happens to parents and children in Cincinnati who become homeless. I think because all of us have some fear about, well, what would happen if my family didn't have any place to go? Or what would happen? I'm living paycheck to paycheck if I lost my job. That's a scary thing to think about. How would I provide for my children if this went wrong or if I got sick? And so when we see families in that situation, there's this natural inclination, because it's so scary, to figure out ways to blame them. And through that blame, they really become othered. They must have made a mistake. They're not responsible. They're not willing to work. They're not being the kind of parents they should be. That happens to the parents and children we serve. And when we bring our faith communities together to be with these families and to sort of walk with them as they're homeless and through their journey back home, we're trying to do what Jim is talking about, which is challenging their faith a little bit.
But to get really specific, sure. What you do is you have various congregations that have the space actually bring homeless mm-hmm. people in, and you put people who are members of those congregations together mm-hmm. with the people who are homeless for a period yeah. of days and whatever,
yes.
right?
So we have host congregations. They actually open up their houses of worship to provide overnight shelter, meals, the hospitality part of our interfaith hospitality network to families. And you're right. What's happening, you know, we're asking people, as inspired by their faith, and Jim just expressed it, you know, from the perspective of Christianity in terms of how Jesus described being there for people in need. But the same kind of inspiration is mm-hmm. found in Jewish and Muslim and other texts. We're asking people to not just talk about that imperative to serve, but to show up and to do it. Mm. And by doing it, not just handing out a meal. It's not like a soup kitchen where you put the meal on the plate and the people pass along and you get to go home and sort of, you know, pat yourself on the back, job well done. In our congregations, people are actually staying there with families. They're bringing with their families with them. They're dining with families. They're talking with families. They're all spending the night together at the congregation. They're sleeping overnight together. It's really more about walking the journey with the families and showing love and understanding and challenging themselves to understand the way in which they're the same as the families they're serving, and that it's not a matter of an other or a handout. It's a matter of how we're choosing to be in community with one another.
What I like about what Stacy and the Interfaith Hospitality Network is doing, it's about relationships.
Yes.
And about faith. This isn't just sort of a quiet safety net to take care of people aren't being taken care of. It's about changing us.
Yes.
Because those relationships change us. I've learned most about the world when I've gone to a place I was never supposed to be and met people I was never supposed to meet and know. You know, I've heard you have a day center where after staying in the church overnight, people come and they go to work. People got jobs and they're homeless still. So I always ask people, service is the beginning. It's opening the door. It's seeing things you never saw before. But you got to ask questions. Why are people homeless? Why is this family? Why are so many people in this nation still hungry? The why question is always the right question to ask. So it introduces people to the people and the problem, and you want them to get to know the people and then want to help solve the problem. And that's what you all are doing.
Yeah.
You're crossing bridges and breaches and getting people in relationship to change things.
Well, that's one of the things that strikes me here, is that my way of thinking about this is that you know, we all want to solve problems and fix things and get a better way to do it. And those of us who have college educations and good jobs, we particularly feel empowered. And if we're white, we're part of this white privilege that you've written about. And we think we have the answers. But the problem is, if we haven't stood in the gap with the people who are divided from us, then we're going to create solutions to the wrong construction of the problem. And it seems to me that what Stacy is doing with her organization is kind of building this bridge to the new America, not just walking across it, but literally constructing the bridge that you write about. And that's what seems to me to be the dynamic here that's kind of exciting.
It's always a great thing when I was a Little League baseball coach for 11 years, 22 seasons. My boys are both, you know, college baseball guys now. And I always, all my black players, every single black player I coached, had the talk with their mom or dad about how to behave in the presence of a white police officer. Mm-hmm. How to put your hands and your eye contact and your, where to stand, what to say, not say. None of my white players had that conversation. And most of the white parents didn't even know what's going on. So when moms or dads, but moms especially, when they talk about their kids' future, hopes and dreams and fears, it's very bonding. But that doesn't happen across these lines, racial boundaries and lines. So when we begin to talk together about our kids in the future, why some parents are more afraid when kids walk out of the door in the morning, black parents than white parents, you begin to understand the problem from the point of view of somebody you're in relationship to. So they aren't just issues and populations and demographics and stereotypes.
Right.
They don't work. They're lazy. You know, most people who get food stamps, for example, work, and they don't make enough money to feed their families. So this gets us in relationship. And then we say, okay, how can we then solve this? This isn't a Republican, Democrat, right-left thing. This is about how do we solve problems in our communities about housing, about food, about policing, about homeless kids. We got to solve this. But you don't, as you just said, you don't know what's going on till you go and see and begin to listen, not just talk, but listen to people.
And you get to go around the country and mm-hmm. meet a lot of people, see what's happening in various cities. You know, I think it's very easy to get a sense of hopelessness at a moment like this when the national leadership seems to be really closed to these sorts of issues. What do you see happening on the local levels? And does it give you hope? And is that where the change is ultimately going to come anyway?
That's the right question. You know, I've been to, before the election, in a number of red states, if you will, you know, to talk about these things. And we have very good crowds, big crowds of people. They're very multiracial, intergenerational. Young people are coming to these things. And at the end of the night, we feel very hopeful about what could happen in the city. Leaders are there, and church and mosques, but also political leaders are there, how to solve a problem. Then I go home and turn on the TV in the hotel room. And the national narrative is so depressing and so hopeless, and it's just frightening. So at the lower level, at the real grassroots level, there's lots of good things that are occurring. And I was in Milwaukee speaking in the Milwaukee Bucks arena because this kid, African-American kid, 23, had been put down and tased for a parking violation. He turned out to be a Milwaukee's basketball player, Sterling Brown. So it caused a whole crisis in the city. So I went and talked about race and trauma. We were all there, mayors and people from the community, all religions, to solve this problem. And so I think people at the local level want to solve the problems. So I'm encouraged by what I see at the local level. The national level is very depressing right now because we have this divisive, inciting fear and division. Is the opposite of what we need. But a new generation is rising up, and my kids are both teenage boys, and they want to build a different kind of future with their teammates and classmates. And so I think we've got to use this moment to go deeper into our faith, number one, deeper into our relationships across racial and religious lines like they're doing, her team, and deeper into our relationship with the people who are most vulnerable, most targeted. Jesus, the ones he calls the least of these. We're going to learn more about society from the bottom up and not the top down. So if we go deeper because of this crisis, it really is a crisis, I think we can come out at a better place. If we just react and are angry and depressed, that's not going to help. How do we go deeper and put our faith, as you're doing, Stacey, put our faith into action?
Stacey, I sort of got two things that I'm thinking about right now. I want to ask you, one, do you think that the people who are interacting with the folks who are served, the homeless people, the families, do you think they're changed? And secondly, are there opportunities through the Interfaith Hospitality Network of Greater Cincinnati for people to cross lines between congregations, to cross lines between that Christian congregation and the Jewish synagogue, between the Jewish synagogue Christian congregation and the Islamic Center, for example, out in Westchester? Are there those sorts of opportunities there?
Yeah. Well, let me start first with the folks in our various congregations and whether or not they're changed. And the answer is absolutely. And that's why people keep coming back. The work that the congregations are doing in terms of providing hospitality and being there and being with families isn't always easy. Families who are experiencing homelessness are going through trauma. It is the hardest time of their lives. And you know, we all know how we feel when we're not having a good time. We're not always happy. We're not always social. We're not, you know I get grumpy when even small things go wrong, right? And so part of what our volunteers are doing are being there even when it's tough, when the people they're being with are having a really rough time. And they're changed by that because they see it and they can imagine themselves going through it. It's a crossover, right? And when they can sit at the end of the table and draw with a child and give mom a few minutes of peace, or when they can bring their son or daughter to have a meal with a family who's experiencing homelessness and see that their kids sort of interacting just like kids do, as, you know, going on about their business and playing, they start to see themselves and their family they're serving and just see themselves as a community of really parents. And figuring out how they want to make Cincinnati collectively the best place for everyone's children.
How about that point of crossing between the congregations?
Absolutely. So one of the really cool things that our host congregations do, the host congregations are using their actual physical space. Right. They often can't make everything that needs to happen on their own. So they get support congregations, and that's where the interfaith magic happens. So we may have, as we have with the Episcopal Church of the Redeemer, over in Hyde Park, who is a host, but they have a Muslim support congregation and a Baptist support congregation, and the list goes on and on. And those volunteers come together and do this as a group. And so they're not only crossing the bridge, learning about families experiencing homelessness, they're crossing a bridge in terms of faith and understanding where they all connect and what they all have in common across those faith boundaries.
Okay. Well, first off, I want to thank both of you for being here today. It's been a real pleasure to interact again with Stacey and the great project that's here in Cincinnati. But having Jim Wallace here, it's a real honor to have had you here and read your materials over the years, heard about you. And it's just wonderful that you're back in Cincinnati. So thank you very much.
I love this town. I'd love to come back. And a lot of people out there often feel afraid and lonely. And what they're doing at the Interfaith Network is responding to the fear. Jesus said, don't be afraid. He said that over and over again. And if we're feeling alone, like lots of people do, the best thing to do is find others who are alone. And then finally, you don't feel so alone anymore. So this responds to some deeper spiritual needs. This is more than just safety nets and politics.
Well, a little homily to end Cincinnati Edition today. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I am Dan Hurley.